golfers will lose an hour in the summer. And I know this seems silly, but we're about to mess with football.
Exempting Alaska from daylight savings hits more resistance in the state house. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, March 19th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Bethel considers opening its first liquor store in 40 years.
There's a lot of people have very entrenched feelings, so I think that we're going to have some very lively debate in the coming months.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast is open for business with courses in accounting, human resources, and public administration. Degree programs and courses available online. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast.
After sailing through the Senate, a bill to exempt Alaska from daylight saving time has lost momentum in the House. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports.
At a press availability on Thursday, House Speaker Mike Chenault said there was uncertainty regarding the bill's fate.
Me personally, I kind of support it, but and how it's going to do in the House, I can't tell you.
The bill would make it so Alaskans do not need to move their clocks forward in the springtime and then back again in the fall. Because that would cause Alaska to be 5 hours behind the East Coast for much of the year, there is also a provision that would allow the state to petition for a time zone change that would cover all or part of the state. The bill was popular in the Senate, earning the vote of all but four members. Supporters said ending daylight saving time would have health benefits and improve productivity. But Chenault, a Nikiski Republican, has heard more opposition to the bill recently.
Now that it's moved over the House, it seems like there's numerous people, business people, calling and having concerns. And
most of the opposition has come from Southeast, which would lose an hour of light in the evening. The tourism and aviation industries have said it would affect their operations. But there are also recreational concerns. Chenault noted that rifle range hours could be cut. Anchorage Republican Lance Pruitt listed a few more impacts.
Golfers will lose an hour in the summer. Look, I know this seems silly, but we're about to mess with football.
The bill has been referred to two committees in the House, but has not yet been scheduled for hearings. Governor Bill Walker has not offered a position on the bill. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Alaska's congressional delegation and a dozen other lawmakers are asking the defense secretary to study how contracting reform has hurt Alaska Native corporations and tribally owned businesses. The lawmakers sent letters this week to Secretary Ash Carter about the 2010 rule change known as Section 811. The reform came amid a massive boom in Native contracting that critics called scandalous. Under the 8A program of the Small Business Administration, disadvantaged businesses can get government contracts without competing for them. For tribes and Alaska Native corporations, Congress abolished the normal $4 million contract cap in the 1980s. That launched a boom worth several billion dollars at its peak in 2010. A slew of negative media and government reports followed, and Congress demanded a change. But the reform, Section 811, is having more than its intended effect, says Kevin Alice, director of the Native American Contractors Association.
Although it, on its face, it would seem to make sense, the way that it's actually been implemented has been to the detriment of Native American-owned federal contractors. They are actually not awarded these contracts anymore.
Section 811 requires agencies to submit justification and approval for non-competitive 8A contracts worth more than $20 million. But Alice says the attention has scared some agencies off from dealing with Native 8A contractors entirely, and others interpret the $20 million threshold as a cap. He says Native contractors have signed very few contracts above that level since the rule went into effect. Alice says ANCs and tribally owned firms need to do business on a large scale because they are trying to improve entire communities.
The awards that made a measurable difference have evaporated, and that's why it's so painful to us. It's not saying that we deserve bigger contracts because of the historical relationship that tribes have with the country or Indians. No. In order for this program to work, which was the design, those larger procurements had a place.
His trade association wants Congress to modify the rule, and he hopes a Pentagon study of the effects of Section 811 will help make their case. Bethel could see its first liquor store in four decades if the Bethel Native Corporation goes ahead with plans to open a package store and it clears regulatory hurdles. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
BNC President and CEO Anna Hoffman said via email that a wholly owned subsidiary, Bethel Spirits LLC, is in the process of applying for a license to put a packaged liquor store in a portion of the Kibusevic facility. That's the location vacated last week by the Swanson's grocery store. The application, anticipated to be submitted in April, would go to the state's Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, the organization that oversees liquor licenses. The city government has a critical role in that it can protest applications and, if certain criteria are met, can stop the board from issuing a license. Bethel Mayor Rick Robb has been public about his support for legal sales of alcohol locally.
You can regulate it. We can raise revenue. We can reduce harm because you don't sell to children. You don't sell to those under 21. We can regulate who we sell it to, as in people that have restrictions on them based by court, probation, bail hearings, things like that.
Bethel has a long history of attempts to change alcohol laws over the past 40 years and had bars and a liquor store prior to the early 1970s. Most recently, in 2009, Bethel voters, by a tally of 615 to 523, removed the local option law that prohibited the sale of alcohol and set limits on importation. In the next year, citizens in an advisory vote rejected five types of liquor sales. The city council then protested all of the liquor license applications filed by businesses, leading the ABC board to reject them all. Residents can currently bring alcohol home from Anchorage and have it delivered by air carriers. Mayor Robb is not sure yet what form the council discussions will take and whether there will be special hearings or meetings. He says he's also not sure about the need for any sort of advisory vote from the public.
We haven't talked about liquor issues in a long time, but they tend to be very emotional. There's a lot of strong feelings. People have very strong feelings. There's a lot of good arguments to support legal sales. There's a lot of good arguments to oppose sales. And there's a lot of people have very entrenched feelings. So I think that we're going to have some very lively debate in the coming months.
Part of that debate will be Susan Murphy, chair of the Lower Kuskokwim School District Board. She fears that students would suffer if parents spend money on liquor instead of food and clothes for their kids.
I plan to speak to the council. I plan to write to the council. I plan to ask my school board to put in a letter of protest to the council. Now, they might not do it, but I'm going to ask them to.
Bethel is the transportation and services hub for dozens of villages that have completely outlawed alcohol in their communities. The Delta struggles with alcohol-related crimes and death well above the state average, with disproportionate impacts on the majority Alaska Native population. And Murphy argues that allowing liquor sales in Bethel would cost the cash-strapped state in the form of increased law enforcement and social services.
We're looking at cuts in the education budget. Public radio's looking at cuts in their budget. Senior citizens are looking at cuts in their budget. It's a ridiculous time to bring up the fact that we should put a liquor store in Bethel. There isn't enough money, number one.
But the city of Bethel is also looking at decreased state revenues, and the prospect of sales tax from a liquor store may change the conversation in council discussions, which has three new members. Bethel Spirits LLC has published a notice in the Delta Discovery newspaper about its intent to apply for a package store license as required by law. Filings with the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development show that the company incorporated earlier this month. The Bethel Native Corporation built the $20 million Kibusevic facility with retail space and a movie theater, which opened last summer. Swanson's, part of Anchorage-based Omni Enterprises, vacated the retail space this past Friday. in Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Juneau Food Bank struggles to meet growing demand.
I just want to be fair. I don't want to see anyone not get anything.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast is open for business with courses in accounting, human resources, and public administration. Degree programs and courses available online. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast.
Army investigators are looking into a Stryker Brigade soldier's allegations of racist behavior by some members of his union. The allegations were outlined in a story posted today to the Army Times website. The story cites an NCO with the 25th Infantry Division's 1st Stryker Brigade combat team at Fort Wainwright. According to the Times story, the staff sergeant says soldiers with the platoon created an opportunity to racially slur fellow soldiers during a weekly event the sergeant says was known as Racial Thursdays. The Times story says he was informed when he showed up for duty with a platoon that Racial Thursday is, quote, a tradition with the unit. The sergeant says it allowed soldiers with a platoon to say any racist remark you want without any consequences to soldiers who've been designated as the recipient of that week's derision. The Times story says the sergeant had served 10 years in the Army and asked not to be identified. The NCO told the Times that he'd filed an equal opportunity complaint against his platoon leader, who he said encouraged participation in Racial Thursdays. U.S. Army Alaska spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Alan Brown says officials with the platoon's brigade launched an inquiry into the allegations last week after receiving an informal complaint about the behavior. Brown declined to talk on tape, but he said in an email that the command is extremely sensitive to any complaints that involve equal opportunity or discrimination and will investigate every allegation. A member of the Tanana Chiefs Conference Native Justice Task Force says the Federal Department of Justice is tracking the case of the Fairbanks Four. That's the four Alaska Native men who the task force and others say were wrongfully convicted of killing a teenager in Fairbanks in 1997.
They stated that they are aware of the case and are monitoring it and are waiting for a decision to be made. And if that decision warrants their involvement, they'll take action.
That's Task Force member Shirley Lee, who outlined the status of efforts to get the state to review the case of the Fairbanks Four on Tuesday during the Tanana Chiefs Conference's annual convention at the Westmark Hotel.
God willing, at next year's convention, Marvin Roberts, Eugene Vent, George Fries, and Kevin Pease will be standing here, exonerated.
Lee says advocates for the Fairbanks Four asked the Justice Department to look into the matter because they didn't believe the state and local officials were seriously responding to requests for a review. She says that's shown by the failure of officials with both Fairbanks Police and the local district attorney's office to look into confessions given in 2011 by a former Fairbanks man serving time in prison in California, who says he was there when 17-year-old John Hartman was beaten to death. He says none of the Fairbanks Four were involved.
Neither office, the FPD, or the DA's office did anything with that confession.
Local law enforcement and justice officials insist the Fairbanks Four got a fair trial. Also on Tuesday, Lee announced that the Minneapolis-based law firm of Dorsey & Whitney has agreed to help with the case. She also says a trial has been scheduled for October. More than half of all homes in Alaska were built in the 70s and 80s. That's according to an Alaska Housing Finance Corporation report released last year that highlighted the need for improvements to the state's aging housing stock. AHFC offers a variety of loan and rebate programs aimed at home renovations and energy efficiency upgrades. Corporation officials were in Juneau last weekend to talk about some of those programs at the Southeast Alaska Building Industry Association's Home and Outdoor Living Expo. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Amelia Harmon just moved to Juneau from Michigan and is considering buying her first home. She's been looking online to get a sense of the market before she starts to shop for real.
A lot of them look like they need work, but that's just from the outside. I don't know what they look like in the inside. I don't like to judge a book by its cover.
Harmon and her mom came to the Juno Home and Outdoor Living Expo to get a better idea of what's available. She says she wants something not too pricey, but also doesn't want to put a lot of money into a fixer-upper.
Not a home that needs too much renovations and have to put more work into it than what you paid for.
Harmon stops at the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation booth, where there's a sign with a floral print couch on it that says the 70s called, they want their house back. Jan Miyagashima, Director of Mortgage Operations at AHFC, says most homes in Alaska are in the 35-year and older range.
Doesn't sound like it's really old if you compare it to the East Coast, but the homes are getting dated. If you don't keep up your home, it will decrease in value.
Alaska Housing offers three renovation loan programs. Homeowners can get up to $312,750 in remodeling financed by having a full appraisal done on their property. Those looking to refinance their mortgages can qualify for a package that allows them to recoup money spent on improvements over the previous year and get an additional loan up to $50,000. Finally, there's a purchase renovation loan that allows buyers to pay for up to $50,000 worth of upgrades through their mortgage loan. Miyagashima says all three programs require a bid from a qualified contractor for the work to be done.
This is allowing people to get the kitchen that they want, the bathroom upgrades.
AHFC does not actually loan money itself. Instead, it works with lenders like banks and credit unions to offer home financing to Alaskans. The state-backed corporation is like Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac in that it buys loans from these lenders and packages them into mortgage-backed securities that are sold to private investors. Alaska Housing also operates the state's home energy rebate programs, which can be used in conjunction with any of its renovation loans. These programs allow homeowners to get an energy rating to identify any issues. The rebate helps pay for the cost of improvements. Jimmy Ord is Energy Programs Manager with AHFC.
The average rebate's right around $7,000. Most Alaskans put in somewhere around $12,000. So there's a good investment from the homeowner and the state in the project.
Alaska Housing also offers energy rebates for new home construction, but in recent years, Ord says the state has averaged fewer than 2,000 new homes per year. That's why the heavy push to improve existing housing.
Most of the infrastructure is already in place, so we have to look at how we're going to move that infrastructure into the next generation.
Amelia Harmon, the potential home buyer looking to lay down roots in Juneau, says right now she's more concerned about finding the right price than she is with renovations.
It's more expensive up here than where I'm from down in the lower 48, but Michigan doesn't have the views and the stuff that Alaska has to offer either, so...
And she says it's good to know that options are available should she need upgrades for whatever home she decides to buy. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The MBA program at Alaska Pacific University offers working professionals courses designed to fit their busy lifestyles. With hybrid online and in-person classes, the MBA at APU is an accelerated, affordable, and high-quality pathway to career advancement. Learn more by calling 800-252-7528 or visiting alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, proud supporter of the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the trail. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
This week, the Mat-Su Borough Assembly went through the quarterly process of approving the next 3 months of funding for storage and maintenance of the MV Susitna, which currently amounts to about $18,000 per month. The Susitna was meant to be used as a ferry between the Mat-Su Borough and Anchorage across Kinnick Arm, but that project never came to fruition, and the borough has been trying to sell it. The borough has an interested buyer located outside the United States. Mat-Su Borough Manager John Moosey says that means going to the federal government, who built the vessel, who built and paid, helped pay for the vessel to get permission.
And because this is a U.S. Navy prototype, primarily designed for, you know, battle missions, that was potentially thought could be used as a ferry, we have to go through these extra hoops. And the second thing is, as far as export license, when you sell outside the continental United States, you need permission to do that.
The borough received $12 million in grant funding from the Federal Transit Administration. Since the boat was never put into service as a ferry, the federal government is asking for that money back. John Moosey says borough attorney Nicholas Spiropoulos and borough assembly member Steve Colligan recently went to Washington, D.C. to speak face-to-face with the FTA.
I really don't think they are looking for a pound of flesh or to financially hurt us, but they have some, responsibilities and obligations. So trying to kind of ferret through not hurting the Mat-Su borough financially versus, hey, we are also accountable for these grants. Is really pretty much, I think, is what's going on here.
John Moosey says the borough hopes to hear back soon on whether or not it has permission to sell the MV Susitna to a foreign entity. The University of Alaska Southeast will have a full-time presence in Wrangell starting this spring. UAS will base a tech prep regional coordinator in the Wrangell Public School District, and officials hope the new arrangement will expand opportunities for students and adults. KSTK's Katerina Sestarek has more.
The Wrangell School Board voted Monday to approve an agreement with the University of Alaska Southeast to bring a full-time UAS Tech Prep Regional Coordinator to the community. Wrangell School District Superintendent Patrick Mayer compares it to having a UAS satellite campus in Wrangell. He says all that's left is the formality of signing the agreement.
It's pretty much a done deal. So we're pretty excited about it. It's going to be a great opportunity for our Wrangell students and the community at large, really.
Mayer says the memorandum of agreement between the university and the school district won't shift any costs to Wrangell.
That was pretty key to us becoming involved in this relationship with the UAS, was that the only expectation on the part of the district was to provide office space. I mean, that just really reflects a win for our district and our kids.
The goal of the UAS Tech Prep program is to help high school students start gaining the skills and college credit they need to continue their technical education after they graduate. Wrangell High School already offers a few courses for college credit through this program, including construction techniques and woodworking. But having the coordinator physically in the school district is an opportunity to expand Tech Prep offerings. Kim Shotko is the Tech Prep Regional Coordinator who's moving her office from Juneau to Wrangell. She covers Southeast Alaska, and some of her programs reach all over the state. She says UAS is interested in developing Wrangell's Tech Prep program, but that's harder to do in a community that lacks a university presence. Shotko says she'll start in Wrangell this spring by helping the high school teachers with the existing Tech Prep courses.
One of the first things is to try to take some of the responsibility off the teachers as far as doing the registration process and talking with the kids and, you know, setting up the payments. And so immediately that's going to be on me.
Part of Shotko's job is to make sure all of those new courses measure up to the university's curriculum standards. But she says she'll help students and adults access information about any course of study throughout the University of Alaska system. Shotko says she can help with applications, scholarships, and logistics.
I can show them what the plan is as far as what types of courses they have to take. Can they take them online? Are they able to stay in Wrangell and do their coursework, or would they have to travel to another community to do it? I can help them with all of that. It's really kind of nice because you have a university personnel right there on campus.
Shotko says her goal is to eventually bring more adult courses to the community so students have the option of finishing college while continuing to live and work in Wrangell. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Katerina Sestarek.
The Southeast Alaska Food Bank hopes to expand its facilities to accommodate growing demand. KTOO's Kevin Reagan has more.
It's 9:15 on a Saturday morning, and the shelves at the Southeast Alaska Food Bank are pretty bare. When the facility opened 45 minutes ago, there were rows of chicken, cheese, soup, and sandwiches. Now that's mostly left is sour cream and a few loaves of bread. Volunteer Judy Brown helps a visitor fill a box with packages of Oreo cookies.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Brown says there's no limit on how much an individual can take from the food bank. She says today's supply is lighter than usual, so she asks visitors to take things sparingly.
I just want to be fair. I don't want to see anyone not get anything.
About 90 individuals visit the food bank this morning and have walked out with roughly 2,700 pounds of food. The majority of it is locally donated from Walmart, Fred Meyer, and Rainbow Foods. Food bank manager Darren Adams says the amount of supply coming in and out has doubled in recent years.
Once upon a time on a busy Saturday, we would get 15 or 20 people showing up here to get food. When the economy started getting worse and worse, you know, we started seeing more people, and we had to move things around in order to accommodate that number of people.
The increased demand has led to plans for an expansion of the food bank by a quarter acre on a plot of city-owned land along Crazy Horse Drive. Adam says the expansion would allow for the installation of walk-in freezers to store more meat, an item always first to go on a Saturday. He estimates the cost of the project to be minimal for the organization, but says the process is still very much in the talking phase. Community planner Sarah Bronstein of Scheinberg Associates is helping the food bank navigate the complex process of getting the project off the ground.
We will be just sort of looking over the shoulder of the city and making sure that things are moving forward.
The Juneau Assembly needs to approve any changes to the food bank's lease. Bronstein says it's usually a three-month process, but does not foresee any hesitation from the Assembly.
Part of the reason that the city leases to the food bank is because this is such a critical service that the food bank provides for the community.
The food bank also distributes non-perishable goods throughout the week to community partners, such as the Glory Hole and the Boys and Girls Club of Juneau. Adam says roughly 25% of their supply is donated from individuals, like the students of Floyd Dryden Middle School, who collected over 1,000 pounds of food for the organization this past month.
We live in a very generous community. It never ceases to amaze me how willing people are to want to step up and collect food for us.
The city's planning commission reviewed and approved the project at their Tuesday meeting. It now goes to the Assembly Lands and Resources Committee, which will decide whether to bring it before the full Juneau Assembly for approval. In Juneau, I'm Kevin Reagan.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Ben Matheson in Bethel, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Casey Kelly in Juneau, Philip Manning in Talkeetna, Katerina Sestarik in Wrangell, and Kevin Regan in Juneau. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Ron Zastro. Pat Yak is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer in the United States and often has no symptoms. If you are 50 or older, talk with your doctor about colon screening today. Learn more at alaskacolonhealth.org. This message sponsored by Ride for Life. The School of Management at the University of Alaska Southeast is open for business with courses in accounting, human resources, and public administration. Degree programs and courses available online. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by University of Alaska Southeast. The 2015 PFD filing season is here. If you have questions about your absences or someone you know away at college or serving in the military, the State of Alaska Department of Revenue encourages you to be proactive. Check out the absence guidelines before applying for your PFD. Visit pfd.alaska.gov and click on eligibility in the banner to learn more. The deadline to apply is March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.